Sure, one might be blind and one might be deaf, but thankfully, these two can still just scream at each other for an hour and 40 minutes. Jamie, let's go watch Hear No Evil, See No Evil. Or See No Evil, Hear No Evil. Yeah, it's the second one.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Good Times, Great Movies. Here we are as we come together every 2 weeks to talk about a movie from the 1980s. Mm-hmm. It's a good time. Sometimes it's a good movie. Sometimes it's a great movie. Either way, I am here. I'm Jamie Laurel. The other half of this team is the DP McCambridge. Are you blind or deaf? If you had to pick, nobody wants to have to pick, but...
I mean, if I had to pick, I mean, I have to go deaf.
You have to go deaf.
I mean, everything I watch, I put on the subtitles anyway.
Yeah, like, you're a very visual guy. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Who would, I'm not trying to insult our audience, but who would pick blind? Like, that just seems to me to be such a hurdle to overcome where being deaf... I just feel like day to day it would be easier.
Yeah, well, look, he's reading lips.
Now, oh, boy. The work that must take.
Yeah, effortful.
Yeah. Well, what about you? What would you choose?
Yeah, it is a tricky one. It is a tricky one. I think, yeah, I like, I don't know. I like sounds and I like music and I like hearing. Okay.
But I want you to make like a top 10 list of just things you like, and you're like, sounds are great. That's top 5 easy.
I do like sounds.
Yes. You know what? It would be very difficult to do this podcast
if you couldn't
deaf.
Hear me.
Yes,
yeah.
It would be impossible.
Exactly.
We could do it without sight. That's easy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we can't watch the movie without the sight.
Yeah, but you could. Did you ever accidentally try and watch a movie where it has descriptive audio on it?
My
dad once had his TV set up, and he called me in a panic and was like, "Like everything I watch, it's just a person telling me what's happening right now."
Oh my! Yeah. Is that a thing? That's a feature.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, it makes
a feature
sense to have that. Just Wow.
He was really,
what was he thinking?
Really
he must
confused.
Have been a little bonkers for him. Yeah.
I want to know how long he watched until he was like, well, something's wrong here.
He was like, this isn't the movie.
I mean, there's a way to get around that, but I feel like that would be difficult too. Also, if you are describing what's happening in something, like, can you talk that fast?
You can describe it, but then again, you can hear it. Like, you can hear a stream, you can hear
You're
traffic,
right.
So you wouldn't have to maybe describe all of those things. But then, too, when you lose one sense, you're supposedly a little stronger in the others, right? So maybe I'd be okay if I couldn't see because I could hear, like...
You could be a superhero, basically. Right, you're on your way to becoming Daredevil? Was he blind?
I don't know. I don't know their powers or lack thereof.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So, but I would assume that I could hear things even more precisely, or know them more accurately, or maybe not. Yeah. So I don't know. It would be a tough. It would be a really, really tough one to choose.
I'd rather just talk about this than this.
Yeah,
movie.
And it essentially
no
that's not
to
this
see
podcast.
No evil, hear no evil. But after about 5 minutes, I went, "Oh, I get it. All right, I know what you get. I understand where the jokes are in this. I know what you're going to do. Although, we can get into it as soon as you want to.
We're going to,
There were some times in this where I was like, that is a really funny line. This is a really funny bit. And it's something that I did not experience when watching Haunted Honeymoon.
Oh, yeah. This is a better work of Gene Wilder. I have to say, I'll just say it because I'm going to say it because of this movie and what it is. Yeah.
Hydrate
first. I'm going to take a slow sip of water.
The listeners are on the edge of their seats.
Must be hydrated when I say these words. I loved watching these two. They were, I was filled with joy the whole time watching their little chemistry on camera and watching them interact. I mean, I don't want to give too much away. But it looks like by the smirk on your face, you did not maybe enjoy this movie. Eyes that can see are telling me that your body language is telling me you perhaps did not enjoy this.
Well, can I tell you something?
Yeah, I'm ready. Take a sip of water.
Oh. It's coffee. All right. I knew you would like this. As I was watching, I'm like, it's not really doing it for me, but you know who's having a great time right now? It's Jamie.
I sure was.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that it's not that it was bad. And you're right. For the most part, when they're I enjoyed watching them as performers.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would like watching them a little bit better in other projects. I might have to dig in. I mean, apparently they did one more movie after this, and then that was it. Like this,
yeah, they have four altogether.
Yeah, this and whatever followed were kind of panned. It didn't make a ton of money, and then that was it. Maybe the earlier ones I need to check out because, they do a great job of kind of riffing off of one another, and they are charismatic, of course. I just, a lot of the stuff, like when they're just yelling at each other, pushing a car into the swamp, I was like, I'm kind of done with this scene. Can we just move on? Like, can we wrap
it up? I wouldn't understand why they put them there. That was one scene too that I was like, why are they here? And what is really happening here?
Why are they trying to dispose of the car? It's not like Psycho. It's not like there's a dead body in the trunk of the police car.
I know. And they don't really do anything with the car. And the car chase even was a lot of fun, but it goes on just a little too long, a little bit. So I see where some of you are like, oh, I would pull that back. But even their back and forth, I just enjoyed like waiting to see what the next joke was going to be and how they interacted. It was fun.
All right.
It was fun. Okay. And I too, I don't know the other movies either. I looked up a little bit, I guess, for those that can't Google themselves and find out. They had this like chemistry together, and in his book or in an interview, Gene Wilder likened it to like a sexual chemistry. Like when they first met and they were first reading lines together, like he and Pryor did some sort of improv or went off script, and Gene just went with it. And Gene said it like it just came from this part of me, this like visceral part of me, I don't even know. And it did feel like magic. It did feel like this connection that was like otherworldly in a sense.
Jamie, there were times in this movie, and maybe it's because we just did Death Trap, where I was like, these two are going to make out. Like two are about to kiss each other. But then they would just like stick ice cream cones on each other's heads. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
That's an odd turn.
Yeah. Well, that was...
And very early on, these two just met each other. They are having conversations like they've known each other for 30
years.
Yeah,
it's very sweet. It's very sweet, yeah. It's like Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks are hanging out. It's adorable.
it kind of is.
Yeah, no, I know. It's when they are having their friend date, even the one where they meet with some ladies and then they get into that fight.
The one is his sister, of course, but those ladies are just there as window dressing. It's just these two men on a date together.
Yeah, essentially. Yes.
All right. So it is See No Evil, Hear No Evil from 1989, directed by Arthur Hiller. He had a couple like back-to-back big-time movies in the 70s, Love Story and The Out-of-Towners.
Ah, okay.
Like a journeyman working director. So we have Richard Pryor. We saw him in The Toy. We have Gene Wilder.
Mm-hmm.
We saw him in Haunted Honeymoon, which our wonderful regular listeners will get to hear at some point soon. I will release that, and you can hear I feel like we probably just were defeated in that episode. there's also Joan Severance, who plays Eve, the bad woman.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
She's a model. Actress.
Oh, okay.
And welt on his face, Kevin Spacey. What is
happening with his face? I don't know.
I kept looking, going, in an earlier scene, was he hit on the side of the head? But no, he shows up that way.
No, it's almost like there was a pimple on his face the days that he was shooting, and makeup was just like, we're going to work with it. We're just going to leave it there. And he was like, all right.
Yeah, I was like, what is that? And why do you shoot? I don't know, just recast him, because I could not. I mean, the thing that did distract me from it is his British accent. I laughed so hard me too. The first time he talked.
When he first started, first of all, I was like, I thought I saw his name in those very long credits. To open us up, we get some very we're walking around the city, getting to know the people of the city, the trains, planes, automobiles of the city, New York City, and...
Oh, the opening.
Finally see Gene Wilder walking. Yeah. I'm like, okay, finally. What are we doing otherwise in this opening?
Yeah, the opening is really like, you know where we are, right? You know what city we're in? Are you, did this not give it all away? Like, right. Are you sure? Right. Just in case. Here's OTB. There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, there's I assume homeless people washing windows when you don't really want them to wash your windows. Are you guys getting this? No? All right, let's show a few more skyscrapers.
But I saw Kevin Spacey's name come up, and I said, Spacey's in this? And sure enough, when he was introduced, I had a good laugh. And he feels so creepy in it, which I guess is meant for his character. But
personally, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, how creepy can I be in this goofy comedy? Oh, that creepy? Yeah. All right,
well, I'm all
in.
For it. Yeah.
Yeah, I did. Like that giant lump on the side of his face, I couldn't get over it.
Couldn't get past it, yeah. I know. And wondering, like, is this supposed to work? I thought they were trying to give him cheekbones, like some kind of weird cheekbone situation. Yes. So I was checking for it on the other side, but it's just on the one side.
Yeah.
And it does. It looks like it was like a blemish, we'll say, a skin blemish of some kind that he just couldn't get under control. And makeup didn't want to fuck with it. So they were just like, well, this is what
How do you fix that in makeup?
I mean, you cover it up. That's what makeup does,
but
right?
I mean, they covered it up. It's not like a big red mark. It's just you can tell his face is protruding on the one side.
No, it looks... Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, it's all right. Distracting.
We haven't
obviously.
Even met him yet. The movie hasn't even started because we're still watching these credits. My God.
Right. No credits last for a while.
So we're introduced. I think it's important to talk about our characters and
I don't remember their real names.
Oh, it doesn't matter. Wally and Dave?
Oh, okay.
Yes. And also, I would assume that Gene Wilder's character should be Wally, but no, it's Richard Pryor.
He's Wally and Gene is Dave.
Yes.
That's right, because he'll go, Dave, yeah.
We're introduced to both of them just starting their day.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Pryor's issue is that he is, well, apparently he's a compulsive gambler, which never comes up again in this entire movie, but he's lost his life savings, I guess.
Yeah,
and his enabler
and
sister
he had quit
drives.
His job. Yes. He quit his job just on the hunch that he might be right on this one bet. And yet his sister enables him not only in his gambling, but he says they go into how they turned, what happened to them. One of their long bromance conversations, they discuss how both of them got blind and deaf.
Yeah, it takes Richard Pryor a long time. It's not until they're pushing that car into the swamp that we realize that he was in an accident. A drunk driver hit him and... Fire, .. blind? I mean, I don't... Listen, I am not trying to argue the premise that any trauma could cause you to go blind, but when he's just talking about burning and blindness, I was like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
Your skin looks impeccable. Like, I don't know.
Well, he's got... That's his reason. He's clearly not been blind forever.
No.
But he's definitely blind now, and his sister pretty much, he's very, he doesn't want to be this.
Right.
And he's angry at the world, kind of, for his situation.
Yeah, it seems that Gene Wilder has accepted and learns to deal with his disability, but Richard Pryor is still in denial. Because we also don't know how long Richard Pryor has been blind. Gene Wilder... Right. Totally deaf for like 7-8 years, something like that. But it was a slow process because of scarlet fever when he was a child. I don't know why we're laughing at this. I assume that was a real problem back in like the 1800s. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And for some reason it happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Richard Pryor wants to be independent, mm-hmm. even though his sister has to drag him around to place bets mm-hmm. and tell him that his horse lost.
Oh, yeah.
But then at one point, he's applying for a job. Sorry, I think we're getting ahead of where we are. But these are our two characters.
Yeah.
Gene Wilder owns a...
like a newsstand of sorts?
Yeah, like an indoor newsstand. Like a newsstand in the lobby of a hotel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Richard Pryor doesn't have a job.
No, no.
All right, no. Okay.
And one reason he quit his job is because the guy treated him like he was blind.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know why. They're both kind of obsessed with tricking people into thinking that they don't have a disability. Because even the one guy, I don't know.
Like the bellhop or
something? Like the hotel manager or something mm-hmm. comes over and starts to talk to Gene Wilder when his back's to him. And even the guy's like, oh, such an idiot. So he gets his attention and starts talking to him. And Gene Wilder's like, listen, there's a vicious rumor going around that I'm deaf. Don't believe it.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Well, the guy that's talking to him, though, is doing that very exaggerated, slow, pantomiming all his words. So I don't know if Gene Wilder's thing is that he lets everybody know he's not deaf. Or
just
that he
this
is
guy.
Deaf. Just this when he for feels sure insulted. He's going to fuck with this guy. Yes. And even this is where you just see them kind of play with their ideas. This is when Pryor's on the train with his sister.
Oh,
and
yeah.
he goes on about like, you mean I'm not white? We have to tell all our friends. I'll have to change my tennis classes. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. I have to cancel my swim lessons. Yeah it's pretty funny. Mm-hmm. And the scene ends with him going, does dad know? Which I think is great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. When they're just allowed to go, I'm assuming off script, although I think Gene Wilder had a hand in writing this
maybe
he wrote it completely. There's a wonderful, I assume it was an outtake that they left in the script. When they go to the bar,
mm-hmm.
Richard Pryor introduces his sister by the wrong name. And the actress laughs, like you can tell that she laughs, and then corrects him. And they left it in the movie because it's genuinely funny. I don't know if it was an intentional joke or not, but it was really great.
I didn't catch that.
All right.
But here we are, like you said, these two. And Richard Pryor does want to kind of be more independent.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's on his way to this, I guess, the job interview with Gene Wilder. And he tells him, just let me go. Just let me go and try. And then it's the blind walking the blind. He is waiting across the street. And another blind guy comes up to him. Oh, he also, Richard Pryor, again, refuses to use his walking stick, his guide stick or whatever. Right. He doesn't want to appear blind, even though he clearly, he does a great job of like doing this kind of blind stare. I wondered why, but I think it's because his expression, like his face is so expressionful.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Expressy is another way to say it.
There you go. They don't give him like the blind guy glasses, but
I love that they didn't do that. Yeah, because I feel like that's an easy way to cover up the fact that an mm-hmm. actor's looking at stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying I'm not saying that, but no, his giant eyes and crazy facial expressions, you need to see those in a movie with Richard Pryor. Don't hide him behind dark sunglasses.
Don't put him behind some shades.
Yeah.
But so there's this goofy thing where he walks across the street with this other blind guy and they actually just walk up onto a delivery truck and his sister's just like, you're doing great.
They start to make their way into the truck too, which seems weird.
It's like let's walk into the forest or whatever. Let's walk into the park. It's like a walk in the park. And like you said, our Wilder has got his little business running, his little stand, and customers must kind of know because when he ducks down to get things or turns around, say, to read the ingredients on the back of the X-Lax bottle or whatever, he can't hear people then.
Right.
Because he's a lip reader.
Yeah, but you would assume that, his regulars understand this.
Sure, sure.
But his not regular, Richard Pryor, comes in for a job interview.
Right.
And this is the first of just... what this movie is for stretches, the two of these guys not able to communicate or not quite understanding. Like,
yeah, it's a fun, like, who's on first kind of situation. Yes. When, so he's, Pryor's got this kind of stare ahead thing that he does. So the whole time, Gene Wilder's like, who are you looking at? Are you even talking to me? Who are you talking to? And because Wilder or Pryor can't see, as he's talking and swinging his arms, he's knocking things down. And every time he knocks things down, Gene Wilder has to kind of go below deck or below the, it's not a deck because they're
it's not a ship. Is this another porthole situation that we're going to have to get into? Yeah.
But whenever Gene's not looking at his face for different reasons, he's missing these huge chunks of things that Pryor's saying. Like, I came for the job because you said that you needed someone with a good personality or a good sense of humor, and I'm your guy.
Yeah.
But Wilder doesn't hear all of that. Wilder's just hearing things like random things.
He's even tried to negotiate his pay at one point where he's like 300, all right, 250, 200. And then Gene Wilder pops up and he's like, 200 what? What do you want? Like, I don't understand. And listen, it's a funny bit. I don't mean to downplay this, but this is a problem I have with this is Gene Wilder understands that he cannot understand what people are saying if he doesn't look at their mouth.
I know.
He constantly turns away from Richard Pryor
while he's talking. This man. I know.
They're having issues, but it's pretty funny. And it's all resolved basically with Richard Pryor saying, I want to introduce you to my friend Tom Collins or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, let's go to a bar to celebrate. Celebrate what? Question mark. Because he did not offer
him the
job.
He's not sure that he's got the job, right?
Because even at the bar, he's like, so do I have the job or what? I don't know. So they go to this bar.
Well, yeah. Yeah, they meet at this bar.
Right, yes.
Pryor gets there first with, like you said, the two ladies. And it's a pretty busy little place, this bar.
It's packed.
It's after work, I guess, after 5 o'clock in the city.
Gotta be some sort of,
everybody's there for happy hour, kind of, yeah. So, and obviously our mate walks in and he's blind, so he can't see. Oh, no. Yeah, he's
deaf. Well, he's
deaf,
already there. So he's already there with his sister and some other rando woman.
Right. And so Gene that walks in, and he can't hear, so he can't hear them calling him over. But they do see. He can see them. So they wave him over. They say hello. And the interaction seems to be going okay, right?
Sure, yeah.
And then Gene is standing on a man's jacket. And there's a misunderstanding that happens there, again, because Gene, when he is not looking up and looking down, say, at the jacket, he only catches part of what people say.
Right.
Which can come off, you know, kind of like a dick sometimes. He seems a little arrogant sometimes.
But
because
this
he's not...
guy flies off the handle.
Well,
like, this guy is in the wrong.
He's probably had a couple
wrong.
Of drinks in him.
You're
you
right.
Know, it's happy. I'm not saying it's right.
He is credited as, like, disgruntled tourist.
Is he?
Which is weird because I was like, I assume this guy came from work. Like, what about him, like, telegraphs tourist?
He had a t-shirt on, maybe? That was what?
A big I Love New York t-shirt?
Right?
Maybe.
Sure. Yeah.
So, yeah, he gets into it with Gene Wilder, and then tough guy Richard Pryor, first of all, very tall, not an imposing character. Like, he seems very thin, but he's like, I'm going to kick your ass, dude. Again, not looking at him at all. Puts up his fists to fight, and then they decide to combine their powers together.
It's pretty great. So Gene Wilder kind of holds on to his back.
Yeah.
To Pryor's back and is giving him the, like, 2 o'clock, you know. All right, now 12 o'clock. Move a little more right. And they're kind of dance. This whole dance that they do.
Yes.
And again, this is, I'm sure if you're not into them or you're not into this, it's you're like, what
tiresome?
Are we watching? But I had a blast watching these two kind of play around like this.
Oh, yeah. It's totally fun. I appreciate that this tourist was nice enough to stand there in front of them and let them punch him over and over.
Yeah,
this guy does he even swing? I mean, I'm sure he does. And then I think he does because they duck a couple times. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He has to duck.
And then
everything.
Another guy at one point, they're both Pryor and Wilder are on top of different men hitting them.
Yes.
And they're kind of talking to each other. This is when he said, did I have the job? You know, I don't know if we make it out of here. Yeah.
Right.
So it's just, it's, It's a very physical. And then we nothing ever happens with the, like you said, the ladies were just kind of there to kind of usher these two in together. The next scene is then where they go on to have their little date in the park, right, with ice cream.
Yeah, it's right after this. They ditch the ladies.
The
sister and whoever that other woman was to go have ice cream in the park. Gee, Wilder's nose is still bleeding.
Yeah, he's got a little thing under his nose. But they have really sweet, real conversation here at the park, right?
Yeah.
It's really cute.
Like, it is a conversation the two old war buddies would be having.
Yeah,
and
yes.
These two met each other, what, 3 hours ago, probably?
They give each other life advice. Is this when he tells them, I'm going to be a lovable asshole, he decides?
Yeah. And I love it how Richard Pryor goes, I could solve all your problems. I'm going to solve all your problems by sticking an ice cream cone on your head and we can have a good laugh about it.
And that's how it's going to do.
That's how all your problems are solved.
And that is.
I don't understand it. And now.
He says, life ain't complicated. And then he just puts that ice cream on his head.
Yep.
It's like life is like a box of chocolates, except it's a blind guy or deaf guy or blind and deaf guy.
This is also a weird, like, cut, and I don't know why this was edited out or maybe not in there at all. After they fight those guys at the bar, we instantly cut to them eating ice cream, which is something they love doing. Like, that's mm-hmm. just their mm-hmm. thing.
It's, yeah.
But then it goes surf. To Richard Pryor, and he's like, and that's how I turned blind. And I was like, we missed the best part of whatever story that was. And we don't hear it for a very long time. But Gene Wilder also talks about how, you know, he had a wife.
Yeah.
And when he went deaf, she left him.
Mm-hmm. He likens her to a witch. He said she had this broom.
Yep.
She was one of these ladies that would get mm-hmm. off and ride away.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had a wife, but she left when he went deaf or fully deaf because it took him some years.
Yeah. These two brand new acquaintances / coworkers, they end this
in
a
right
hug.
Down into it.
Like there's
yeah.
a hug at the end
yeah.
of this scene.
They really enjoy each other's company, and it's
yeah.
really, really nice to see.
Yeah.
So
I want the movie I wanted is not the movie that happens now and for the rest of this movie. And I'm not complaining about every part of this, but much like.
Did you want to see a training montage next?
Oh,
when he gets trained out to work the new stand?
I just want to watch these two work. Like,
yeah.
that's all I kind of wanted.
And watch them interact with customers.
Yes.
And
I know
go
that's
about
not a
day.
Movie. I
and
know
more
you can't
times
do
for
that.
Ice cream
right.
and lunch breaks. And yeah.
But
yeah.
I am reminded of movies, certainly one from near this time, like Three Men and a Baby. There's heroin in that movie for some
yeah,
reason.
There is.
But it's not a big part of the movie. You don't remember that part of the movie. All you remember is the interaction between the three men and a baby. And even something like Dumb and Dumber. I think there's something about like exotic animal trafficking or
yeah,
something in
yeah.
that movie. But who cares? It's such a minor thing. This movie now has to have a plot. And the plot is the movie. And at every turn, I'm like, I don't care about this. I just
well,
want to watch these two
thing.
Be blind and deaf.
It is weird. So this... It starts because
yes.
because we already had the premise of Pryor having a bookie or having a gambling problem, right?
Yeah,
isn't that kind
what
of the guy
his bookie mixed up? In? Like I did, I, like couldn't this just be? Does this have to be the bookie? Couldn't this
well,
just
and
be
I like
a guy?
That it could be drugs, or it could be just like a suitcase with a crazy amount of money, or but it's this
oh,
random
that,
coin. That is hidden inside the suitcase.
Also
like she's got this crazy looking suitcase.
Yeah. And holds like government secrets to making yeah. I don't even know. It's so convoluted.
Yeah, it's a very weird. So this guy walks in and he's got there's also a lady in her legs because and who smells good.
Yeah.
But this guy walks in and this is Pryor's bookie guy, right?
Yeah, I don't think we should gloss over this because we really have to like make sure people that haven't watched this movie understand what the plot is. I know we talked about a coin, but it's so like a coin, Jamie, a gold coin.
Yeah.
It's like they had a child write the plot and the kid's like, I don't know, gold coins? Maybe?
Yeah, he finds a gold coin. Yeah. And the gold coin is like I said, he's got this briefcase, which makes you think, oh, there's some kind of documents or like, you know, like those stacks of money is in the briefcase, and there's going to be some silly briefcase exchange of some kind. But there's this little like compartment. It's not even a compartment. You can't even call it that because it's just enough to fit the coin. This little
it looks like a Canadian quarter or something. Like it's not even like a giant flashy gold coin. Because it's easy to
throw. No, because when it falls in the cigar box with all the other change, you don't notice it being any different than the other coins, right?
Right.
But he's got this coin, and he's at the newsstand to drop it off, I guess, to kind of shake it, the bookie, right?
I don't know what the bookie's plan. The bookie's plan, first of all, he talks to Gene Wilder and is like, hey, is that blind guy around? Because he owes me money. Mm-hmm. So was this just a stop off on his way?
I think so. I think that
steal the coin. He's like, you know what? I need some traveling money, because is that what he's trying to do? Get out of town with this coin,
steal it
because it's worth something to someone.
So. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
you're right.
All right. Thank you for answering these questions that don't even need to be answered. But go ahead.
But while he's there, a woman walks in as well.
Right.
We find out. Well, what is she? Is she like a hitman?
So this sweaty, very sweaty bookie comes in. Mm-hmm. And is his plan to get Gene Wilder to turn his back so that he can put the coin in with the rest of the change?
Yeah.
So he asks him to read the back of like an antacid box.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Which he does.
He does. Very kindly reads it. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't see the interaction when this sexy lady walks in and like wrestles the briefcase away from this guy, and the guy's like, I wasn't gonna do nothing with it, I was bringing it to you. And then she shoots him,
then she kills him
in the middle of the day, in the middle of a hotel lobby with no one around but a deaf man.
And meanwhile, the deaf man is reading off a label, a medicine label, basically, for antacid.
Yes,
so and his back is turned, he doesn't see or hear any of this commotion.
Yeah, and she notices this, I guess assumes he's deaf because doesn't turn the gun on him, just kind of walks out with the briefcase.
Well, they have this little kind of sexual, quote, sexual tension between them throughout the movie, which is awkward to watch because I'm like, I don't think Gene Wilder's enjoying this either.
Yeah, I was like, Gene Wilder, I don't think this lady's into you. Like, I don't know what you think is going to happen with this woman who has instructed for your death, basically, multiple times in this movie. And the other thing is, you know how this movie should have ended? And they don't have enough screen time together, so I understand why it doesn't. Plus, this lady's willing to take her clothes off. Gene Wilder should have ended up with Richard Pryor's sister. Like, I kind of thought that was... Like,
nice
early little... on, I thought there would be something there. But she's barely a part of this movie, so I get it. But I don't know.
That's what you wanted.
That's kind of the way these movies work.
You just wanted to see it happen where they were just working the stand, and at the end, the relationship between...
Yeah,
I see it.
Uh-huh.
I see it between those two got heated. I love it. But that's not the movie that you get.
No, it's not.
Mm-mm. No. Off runs this long-legged woman, or this lady with nice legs.
Well, that's because he turns around for some reason and only sees her legs. I don't know how that's possible. As she's walking away, and the guy that he was just talking to is gone.
Right. He can't even see him because he's below the counter. So he
below
can't
deck.
See him. And then, below deck. Now, Pryor was outside waiting for the papers to arrive, right? He was waiting for delivery.
Yeah.
But then he comes in because he heard the gunshot.
Right.
So he comes in, and just as Wilder's turning around, and then he falls over the dead body because he can't see it and goes below deck. So Wilder's like, everyone, this is a weird day. Everyone's just disappearing on me. But then when he walks back around, Pryor is on top of the dead guy.
Yes.
Wilder is like, oh my gosh, I think you're on top of a dead guy. And then they find the gun on top of the dead guy. And Wilder is holding the gun.
Yeah.
And
wouldn't it make more sense for the blind man to pick up the gun rather than the guy who can see that it's a gun? And he's like, look at this. look at this.
And when
thing
he
here.
Does it, I think it's in that moment of like, yes. If you're like, oh my God, what situation did we just find ourselves in? I think this guy is dead. I think this is a gun. And then, yes, Pryor is the one that says, I think you should put the gun down. Or you need to throw away the gun because cops immediately come.
Oh,
when, P.S.
Immediately.
When cops come in this movie, it's not just one or two. It's like the whole city.
The
comes.
Entire police
that
force
That one when
shows
they
up.
Go to go to the hotel that they think they're staying in, it's like so many cop cars show up. I'm like, what do they think?
The cop in this movie.
Oh, he's unhinged at the end. It's pretty.
The end of this movie is amazing. He's almost in tears because he's not allowed to shoot these innocent men. And did you hear the one cop be like, let's just go get you a hot chocolate?
Yeah.
You'll be okay. And I'm like, what movie does this guy think he's in? He was actually very funny. I thought the cop was really funny.
Yeah, the lieutenant, sergeant, whatever, the lead cop guy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he has no time for, I mean, we'll get to it, but when the one cop's like interrogating them and this guy goes in, he's like, I got the mayor breathing down my neck. And I'm like, it's one dead bookie. This is not, like, that's something you would see in Bad Boys when about 20 cars exploded and there's 40 dead people. Yeah. That's how a police chief should act then.
Well, lots of cops are here. These two, blind and deaf guy, are in a predicament because they are both basically sitting on a dead body, literally sitting on a dead body. Mm-hmm. And Pryor instructs Wilder to throw the gun. And when he does, Wilder just tosses it. And then the shot fires. So now the cops are really on alert.
Right.
And they just start arresting. They put Wilder in handcuffs. And Wilder's like, you didn't even ask me questions. How do you even know that I'm a part of this? I'm just selling news. I was just reading antacid ingredients because he asked me to. Like, I don't know.
And you know this is a movie and not real life, because if Gene Wilder had thrown that gun and went off in real life, the cops would first of all gun down Richard Pryor.
Aww.
He would be dead immediately, and then I guess Gene Wilder would be taken into custody. But they allow, like, they cuff Gene Wilder and allow Richard, because at first I was like, oh, why are they arresting Gene Wilder and not Richard Pryor? No, they just take a minute because they allow him to take the coins out of the cigar box. Even Gene Wilder in handcuffs is like, make sure you get the change out of the cigar box. And he does. He puts it in his pocket, and they both are hauled downtown to where they are being interrogated in a little interrogation room that we've seen time and time again in TV shows. And I love how they cut to Gene Wilder saying, I think that lady shot him, because when the commotion went down, she walked away. And the nice cop sits there and he goes, well, that does make sense. And I'm like, what do you want? What are you talking about?
Well, and then, like you said, the angry chief comes in and kind of was like, yells in Wilder's face. And this is when Wilder goes, what are you saying? Fuzzy Wuzzy was a woman?
It's so strange. Because this, like I said, he's yelling about how the mayor's on his ass. And the one cop goes, well, listen, the one guy's deaf and the one guy's blind. I'm having a real hard time. It's like he didn't hear that and walks in and has no idea that there's any disability in the room and doesn't understand why.
Well, and they cover for each other for their disabilities. So at least Pryor's always like, you got to look at him if you're talking to him. You got to look at him. Or Pryor will like say that's not, you know, they'll interpret things for each other.
Right.
But yeah, they decide. What does he say? Because they say what do they say? Because then they're going to book them now and put them behind bars. And they think they're also gay lovers. And Wilder starts yelling, we have mangina. No, not mangina.
Yeah. And then he goes, we both use condoms. I'm like, how do you know that about Richard Pryor? You just met him.
And they get dragged
off. There's a lot. But you missed one of the craziest parts of this scene. Is he's interrogating them, and then they go, the professor's here, and a man in a lab coat walks in and is like, I think these two did it. And they're like, off to jail with you guys.
That's right. That's what? It's the guy in the lab coat that says whatever the word is that he misinterprets. I don't write it down.
I hope it is mangina. But yeah, it is. It's very strange, but immediately they are
getting booked. Yeah,
they're then just, I guess, taken downstairs. I'm not sure how time works in this. At one point, Richard Pryor's like, man, I can't believe we just met yesterday. I'm like, huh? What? How has more time not passed in this movie?
No, it's true. It's only been a day since their drinks and ice cream. And then the day of work was the next day. And this was his first day of work. It went down.
Yeah. And this is very fun when quickly they go cut to Kevin Spacey. Because is when we cut to Kevin Spacey and this woman that we met.
Kevin Spacey and his face apparatus, we'll call it.
His bulging face and the fact that he's like, hello, hello, I'm Kevin Spacey.
I'm evil on account of my British accent. Can you not tell?
It's a terrible accent. It's like he just did it for fun and they went, that's hilarious. Just keep it up. And these two are like looking through the briefcase for the coin and they realize they can't find it. And then she, I guess, realizes, I'll bet those two idiots have it. Mm-hmm. And they've been arrested by the police.
Mm-hmm. So we got to get on to them. So they're like, well, let's get to them. We'll go bail them out. That's all.
Oh,
right? That's what they decide to do.
I wrote it down. This is early in my notes, so I don't think that this statement of mine held. When this woman's trying to take his picture, I wrote, this is the funniest part of this movie.
Oh, I do love this.
She's amazing.
Yeah. She comes in and, she's not coming in. They're getting their what is
mugshots.
Mugshots done. Yeah. And again, they're like a team and he keeps turning or Wilder keeps turning to listen or to see.
To read Richard Pryor's lips.
And every time he does, he needs to turn back to look. It's just a funny back and forth where she keeps saying, now turn, and he'll turn to look
Wrong way. And she'll be tell him to face forward. Now tell him not to move. And then Richard Pryor will tap him on the shoulder. So he turns to look at him again and he says, don't move. So then he freezes with his head turned. It's so funny.
It goes on for a minute. And even Wilder is like, I'm getting tired of this. And she's getting so frustrated. She starts going, shit, 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 shit.
When
and he's like, why is she saying ship? What is ship?
Yeah.
What
is she saying shit or ship? And then Richard Pryor's like, she's saying shit. I love it how he's like, oh, yeah, why would she just be yelling ship over and over again? I should have known. This woman storms off.
She can't handle it.
I do love it when she's like, I will get your picture when you're asleep.
Yeah.
She was really funny. And I looked her up because I was like, she's doing a great job. She's just a character actor who's been doing stuff for forever.
Good for her.
You've seen her in every TV show and every movie. So, yeah. So they go. After they get their pictures taken, they go downstairs in the police station and Kevin Spacey and this woman are just there.
Yeah.
They showed up pretending to be their lawyers. Is it that easy, Jamie?
Yeah, I guess so. They look official, right? He's got an accent. She's got good legs.
Right. Yes.
So they claim to be their lawyers. They bail them out. And these guys at first
they don't
even
bail them out. No, because they're like, we'll see you two later.
Oh,
because they don't
bail
out because they have to escape. So I was like, why are they there? Are they only there so that they can kind of recognize that they're the killers?
Because they don't.
Gene Wilder notices it when she walks away.
No, they decide to escape. Oh, no, because he is still handcuffed.
Yeah.
They decide to escape.
Yeah. Because Gene Wilder notices that it's her because he has to see the back of her legs, not the front.
Right. He has to see her calf.
Right. Yeah. And, Richard Pryor smells her perfume.
Right. And that's the girl that was there. That's the woman that they've been saying.
Yes.
You know, was there.
And neither of them goes, and who's that guy she's with? And what's wrong with his face? Neither of them say that.
No. No, but now they're nervous because they know these guys want them. And so now they not only have to escape jail, but they have to escape being released to these guys or to where these guys can find them.
Yes.
So somehow they do.
I love that you said somehow because it is the most somehow thing.
This is when, so they're going to get, I guess, put, I don't know where they're going, in an elevator with the chief and another officer. And they're kind of freaking out, or at least definitely Wilder is kind of like, what are we going to do about this? Like, they were, you know, these are the two murderers, essentially, mm-hmm. these two people that want. So they take a break by the water fountain.
There is a funny bit of dialogue here where Gene Wilder is like, that was the killer. And the one cop's like, your lawyer is the killer? And this is important to note later, because later I was like, wait, how did how did he just start punching Kevin Spacey? Richard Pryor keeps walking into walls. And cop goes, you put handcuffs on the blind guy? So they do uncuff him. And then they do. They throw the cops in the elevator somehow. And then they walk out with the free Iran demonstration.
Together they're in the elevator, but they're not saying anything. Because now Pryor has calmed him down and they've taken a break at the water, at the fire hydrant. At the... We didn't need that much water at the water fountain.
Right.
And they get on the elevator to go somewhere with the cops and they're not saying anything. You don't know why. And all of a sudden when the cops turn around, it's time to get off the elevator. Both Pryor and Wilder spit water all over these cops. Which is a very fun like getaway trick, I guess.
I missed that they stopped at the water fountain. And when they spit water, I was like, how? How did that happen?
And then the cops don't get out of the elevator in time. And like you said, as these two now have escaped, at least being with them, now they're in the middle of a protest about Iran.
Right.
A reporter
stops them and is like, well, now that you've been freed by the police. And I'm like, Gene Wilder's still in handcuffs. Lady, do you not see that?
Yeah.
And I don't know what they say.
She says something about commies and Gene Wilder, again, is reading lips. So he's like, well, I don't know why you call it. I call it comedy, which you could say. And so he makes some comment about the new comedy. And she's just kind of like, what are you talking about?
And then they just walk away. They just walk down the street. But then it's hilarious.
But now it's again together because, Wilder is basically the eyes of Pryor. Right. So it's like, come on, we got to, as they're walking down these alleys and trying to escape.
This is, again, Richard Pryor. You know people want to kill you. And Richard Pryor is like, don't hold my arm. Don't you lead me anywhere. I need you to stomp and then I will follow you because I am an independent blind man.
No, his reasoning is it's not his independence that is getting him. He says they know that we're blind and deaf together. And so they know that I'm going to be leaning on you to see. So walk ahead of me, but just stomp your feet really loud so that they think we're two individuals.
Right. Yeah. Not the fact
that you don't look crazy.
Not the fact that he's still wearing handcuffs.
Right.
It's the fact that they're looking for a blind and deaf duo.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, but immediately they're found by Kevin Spacey. He and that woman just appear to be driving by and they're like, well, there they are right now.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, because they're looking and there's Wilder marching like a lunatic, just a couple of feet ahead of Pryor. And Wilder keeps marching, but the lady they both stop Pryor. Pryor does this thing where he mouths things like as if he's whispering to Gene, but it doesn't matter. I don't get it.
Gene's superpower of reading lips is kind of useless.
It's limited. Yes. We'll say that. Yeah.
But it is limited. And this is, at this point in the note, I wrote, shouldn't the conflict be over now? Because they find the coin, they just dig it out of Richard Pryor's pocket, and it's like, we got the coin. And the bad guys are like, well, what do we do now? Do we kill them? And my thought immediately is, no. The police think that they have murdered a man and now escaped from jail. You can just go.
Yeah,
like, you two are good to go. Mm-hmm, like, let them go. Who cares? It doesn't matter. They're in a bunch of trouble anyway. But no, she calls their boss
from a reveal
at the end of this movie where I'm like, why is this a reveal?
Oh, that he's blind too?
No, just who the actor is. Oh. Like, I expected, like, I don't know, Roger Moore to turn around or something. Somebody that we know and have seen, whatever. She gets on the phone with him. This is another puzzling part of this movie. She gets on the phone in a phone booth and is like, what should we do? Should we kill them? Oh, I'll meet you on the plane. We need to get out of the country. And Gene Wilder's watching all this, reading lips. So you know he's concerned. The woman gets off the phone, comes over and is like, all right, time to kill you because we got to leave the country. I'm like, what? The lip reading did not matter.
Didn't serve.
Who cares?
No. Until later when he said, again, he gets names mixed up all the time, like even the Tom Arnold or whatever the drink name was.
If someone out there makes a drink called the Tom Arnold, I want to know what's in it.
I don't know what
You were mixing up Tom Collins and Arnold Palmer into Roseanne's ex-husband.
What a great jig.
That would be great. I assume it would be very silly.
Oh, you have to drink it with a crazy straw. Oh, man.
And to top this off, a crazy straw. Anything's a Tom Arnold if you put a crazy straw in it.
It's true.
So she's like, all right, Kevin Spacey, it's time to do what you do best, which is to shoot handcuffed men in an alley. And yeah, she basically like gets in the car and drives away. Like, I'll circle the block and pick you up after you shoot these two guys.
You better be done. Yeah, your deeds better be done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, the whole time, Richard Pryor is pretending that he's still handcuffed. He always has his hands behind his back, but he's not handcuffed.
Right. And now they get to an alleyway, but they try to distract him before they get down the alleyway. Like, you really don't have to kill us. We're not going to say anything. Come on. What are you really going to do? He is distracted, Kevin Spacey, by something just right.
It's a homeless man who spilled cans all over the place.
That's right. Yeah.
He's distracted enough for Gene Wilder to get behind Richard Pryor.
Well, Richard Pryor starts giving this, we'll go down the alleyway when my buddy tells me what time it is.
If you're going to kill me, I need to know what time it is. And Kevin Spacey keeps moving, and the whole time Gene Wilder's like, 1 o'clock, no, noon, I'm sorry, it's 3 in the afternoon now, and everything. Kevin Spacey, I don't know, just standing there being like, what's happening? What's wrong with my face?
He's getting mad. He's like, it's not 12 o'clock. It's not 1 o'clock. And then, sure enough, what a punch. Pryor can punch, right? And he knocks.
Yeah. Where's the backstory that he used to be a boxer and he got punched so hard in the head he went blind?
Went blind. There you have it.
That's the backstory. Mm-hmm. That would explain how he can knock out Kevin Spacey with one shot.
Mm-hmm. And off he goes. And so now off they go because Kevin's
knocked
out.
Stealing a police car. There's just a bunch of police again, I guess, down the alley a little bit.
Looking for them.
Yes. They get a police car and I don't know, like the blind guy drives.
Yeah, the Richard blind Pryor. Well, because Wilder's still handcuffs, handcuffs. So the blind guy, he says, I'm going to drive and you're going to tell me where to go. And that's quite the adventure as they steal this car. And they drive through like a market.
Oh, they go everywhere. They drive through a bunch of meat.
Oh, yeah.
Like at one point, I thought the chase was over there, but no, they just back up.
No, then
and
they
keep
back
driving.
Out of there. He's like, we got to get out of here. The cops are chasing them. At one point, they are trying to switch spots. Pryor's ass is in the air, and Wilder's trying to shimmy over. Pryor, because they're in a cop car, so there's a shotgun on the back of the seat.
Yeah. The shotgun
Pryor
goes
shoots
off.
Somehow blows the door off
of the car. Don't know how the physics worked there. That shotgun was facing the back seat.
Don't know either, but they're holding on. They're in this car with the one door off. Now, the cops are not only following them, but Kevin Spacey and the woman are also following them. Everyone's shooting at them. But for a blind and deaf guy, man, did they maneuver around the city, and it's quite the chase.
It's quite the chase. I feel like we've talked about this on the podcast before. I'm not a big fan of car chases in movies. I find them pretty dull and pretty repetitive. This was kind of the same.
Yeah.
My problem with this is this movie has a few gay jokes. Honestly, not enough for my taste. Like, I think you could do more with this. But when Gene Wilder's like, you steer and I'll work the pedals, I was like, why are you not sitting on his lap? Like, why are you working the pedals from the passenger seat? It doesn't make sense. But it does lead to them trying to crawl over each other, which is fun. And they drive through a warehouse, you assume into the river, but no, they crash into a garbage barge.
Trash barge.
And they have an unsettling / romantic conversation at this point where I was like, when they're talking, it's very Willy Wonka-ish where it's like repressed rage or something that Gene Wilder is expressing in this conversation where I'm like, he might murder him or they might have sex on this pile of garbage right now.
No, it is. It's yeah. But and then at the same time, this is what else do they say? This is when they finally decide, fuck it. Fuck it all, right? Isn't this their fuck it conversation?
Yes, because after they somehow get the car off of the garbage barge.
I'm guessing the barge like just went like splashed out into wherever they are, like just spilled out rather. Just
okay, and then they drove it to a swamp somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they're cutting, you know, they're cutting the cuffs.
Oh yeah, now you see Pryor, who's blind, cutting the with a saw in his hand,
right,
cutting the cuffs off of Gene Wilder. And now they're moving, like you said, this is a weird, especially because they are so physically funny, and they're so that's why I like that fight scene, because they're moving all around and he's holding his back when they're in the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And this, where they're just either one of them is on either side of the car, and like you're, like you said, why are they pushing this car barge up? Like,
right,
I'd rather they even like sat at a diner and had this conversation than through the right.
Agreed, because this is the part of every one of these comedy movies where your two leads have to have a fight.
Right.
You know, like, and be like, oh, I'm better off without you. Although this is immediately after this, they're together again. It's like this never happened.
Yeah.
I did find it kind of funny, at least early on, when Richard Pryor goes, hey, have you ever tried someone just screaming into your ear? Maybe you can hear that. I did find that funny, because G. Wilder's reaction of like, I've never tried that before.
Yeah.
That's why don't you just do that right now? And he's like, oh my God, I hear something. I thought I heard something. Really? No, I'm deaf, you idiot. That was kind of funny.
Yeah, well, this is what sets him off. Like, this is what sets his, like, he's just like, yeah, I'm deaf. I'm dead. He screamed out. They're really angry with each other.
Yeah.
And you know. And now is, like you said, they have their fight, and Wilder walks off, leaving Pryor, who now feels very vulnerable, because without, he doesn't even know where he is, and they're in some kind of swamp situation. Mm-hmm. But like you said, they kind of make up pretty quickly.
They make up immediately, mm-hmm, because Richard Pryor has to call his sister, who now, mm-hmm, kind of becomes part of this movie, to help drive them to a hotel where the bad guys are gonna be.
I didn't understand
that. Maybe a hotel, really, like the same hotel, or a hotel across the parking lot?
I didn't understand the hotel interlude at all.
Okay.
I just thought that was because they needed a ride, and they were like, meet us at the hotel.
Right.
And
okay,
then somebody saw them at the hotel, right? Because the cops now know that that's
first of all,
there.
Why is this parking attendant in this movie as much as this guy is? This random man who they gave lines of dialogue to. But Jamie, without the hotel, though, we would not have the amazing conference like scene where Richard Pryor is a... So they go to this hotel, and I guess they look at the register and see that there are some Swedish?
No, I wasn't talking about this hotel. I was talking about the one that they go to when all the cops show up, the motel, when the cops show up and think they're in there. Is that the same hotel? And it's all the couples that come out?
Wait, what's happened? Is this a part of the movie that I missed?
Wait a minute, let me see.
I watched a cut of this movie where... I think there may have been some scenes missing. I just found it online, and there were a couple points where it would cut immediately to something else. I'm like, how did we get here?
Well, there no. Okay.
Talk to me
when
about
this. When they get out of the water.
Okay,
They're going to call his sister, and then they see, or no, they're going to go into some hotel, like a motel after they call his sister. And Wilder sees that they are on a cover of a newspaper, a wanted, like on the, did you see any of that?
No, I didn't see any of this.
Oh, okay. So he sees that. And I think they were going to just spend the night in this, like whatever motel. And that's where Pryor's sister was supposed to meet them. Now, somehow the cops knew that they were going to be at that motel. They got word, I think, because the sister, they must be tracking the sister, I was assuming. And so they knew the sister was headed to this one motel to meet with them. It's not the hotel where they do the convention. It's like a motel situation, because then tons of cars show up, cop cars show up, because that delusional, like, or that...
The chief of police?
The chief, is just going, like, we need to get everybody so mad that these two have got one over on him. And when they show up at the cops show up at the motel and they say, like, you know, come out with your hands up, and all these rooms enter, and it's basically all these, like, it's like a motel. So it's all right. These, like, one guy comes out with this underage girl. He's like, she told me she was 18.
Oh my God, I missed and all of this.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, that's the hotel I thought you meant.
Wow, this was not in the cut of the movie I saw.
And then they go into a room. So it's all these couples, like I said, all these people come out, and then they, the blind and deaf, you know, the Wilder and whatever don't come out. So they go to the room that they think they're staying in, and they get to the room, they look around, and they're gone. It looks like they escaped through a window.
Okay.
They don't know. So the chief is really mad. And then before he leaves, the chief randomly just looks under the bed as if they were hiding under the bed the whole time. But they're hiding in the vent, actually, with the sister in the room. You didn't say it? I see that.
None of this.
Ah, because the chief walks out now, and he's so mad. And then you can see their three faces up in the vent in the room of the hotel.
What
the
an sister. Odd part of the movie to cut out in the cut. Because there's been nothing up to
but
this point.
But in reality, what you didn't really need that. Like, I just told it to you and did it. You go, oh, that makes sense then why this happened.
No. Yeah. Like, they were fighting and pushing a car into a swamp, and then they were checking into the hotel as two Swedish doctors.
Well, now they go to another hotel, this where the convention is.
Wow,
and they check
okay.
in as these Swedish doctors, yeah.
And they're unconvincing as Swedish doctors.
It's
Richard Pryor's Swedish accent, he should be on our podcast. Too bad he's dead. He should be doing that bad accent on our podcast, because
so
it's
bad,
not
it's good.
Even it's like the most tamped down Swedish chef I've ever heard in my life. It's kind of just Richard Pryor doing Richard Pryor.
And they have this guy checking into the hotel right before them with the jolliest of, what do you call them, hotel clerks? The girl checking them in.
The girl is so excited to be on camera with Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder.
She's just jolly and happy to be there. But she, they overhear another customer saying, she's telling the customer, no, we're all sold out because of the convention. I only have three rooms left. It's for these, and she names, it's for, and she takes this box out with their keys. It's for these three doctors. If they don't show, you can have the room.
Yes.
So now they make his sister go and pretend to be blind and go up to the desk and say to the desk clerk girl, can you show me where the bathroom is? Can you take me there because I'm blind? So they distract her.
Yeah.
So the two of them, while Wilder goes and reads the card names,
right.
So they pretend to check in as these last two doctors.
Yeah,
that
Gene Wilder misreads the guy's name and mispronounces it. And I love how she has to say, are you sure, blah, blah, blah. He's like, that's my name.
Yeah.
You're right. How can I forget? This is, I believe, the funniest line or exchange in this movie. When she's apologizing to them because of the room issue, and she goes, we're out of doubles, but I was able to get you a room with two queens. And Gene Wilder goes, we'll get those fellas out of there. We have to get some sleep.
I did laugh at that.
I really enjoyed that.
Because he says it with his Swedish accent, too, which makes it even more fun.
Yeah, it was very funny. I was like, why aren't there more hilarious gay jokes in this movie?
Yeah, yeah, no, that was good.
Yeah. So the sister,
now the sister's gone for a little bit. She's got her
plan is to smash into Kevin Spacey's car in the parking lot in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But so are they at this hotel because they know that the villains are at the same hotel?
So this was when earlier, when they do finally get in the car with the sister and they're kind of catching her up on all the things, Wilder says when she made the call, when the sexy girl made the call, I read her lips. And she said the name. I'm going to say Tom Arnold because it's just our joke. He said Tom Arnold. And she said, that's not a person. That's a place. That's a hotel, you silly idiots. We can go there. So that's how they knew. It wasn't that they were going to meet this person. They were going to this place that has a person's name.
I love how Tom Arnold is now
is
both
in this, is in this
a
movie.
Drink and a hotel and a and man in real life. This is great. So Gene Wilder's superhuman ability is that he reads lips. So for some reason,
even with binoculars,
why do they have, where did they get this ladder for one?
Okay.
Richard Pryor and his sister are holding this ladder just straight up right next to a tree that he could have climbed to spy
it's
in
so
on Kevin Spacey talking on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what information he gets from this either. Maybe like the location of the bad guy's house.
Yeah, with maybe. All the windows, I think. I'm right. Not sure. Yeah.
Oh, it's insane. And then, so after this, I feel like maybe I watched the most choppy cut of this movie, because suddenly after he's on that ladder, I see a man grabbing Richard Pryor out of the hallway and being like, you got to come to this symposium or whatever.
Yeah.
We got to take you. You know, a lot of you're like a world famous doctor. And Richard Pryor just goes along with this guy.
Well, he doesn't want to. No, he tries to get away, but he does have to. Right. Well, the two of them now decide to sneak into the room.
They split up.
And get the coin back. They decide to go together, where Richard Pryor is supposed to stand outside.
Right.
And let... Well, he's blind. And listen.
Wait, what? Wait a minute.
Yes. The idea is a little shaky. Movie. Pryor's outside of the door listening to see if anybody comes.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
They send Wilder inside because he's the eyes to look around and get the gold coin. Right?
Well, they've realized that the only thing they can do to clear their names is to, I guess, get this coin.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they have to do. And they have recruited Richard Pryor's sister to mm-hmm. smash into Kevin Spacey's car in the parking lot, distracting him mm-hmm. with a lot of insurance talk.
Yeah. She goes on and on like, oh, but my husband's in insurance and I can't not get your information. And he's like, I got someplace to be. He's clearly frustrated by her.
Later when the woman comes out, she's like, what are you doing? And he's like, I don't know. This woman's making it needlessly complicated. This mild fender bender. Gene Wilder goes in the room. As we said, Richard Pryor is taken to a medical conference. Do we want to talk about the Gene Wilder part or the Richard Pryor part first? Well,
Richard Pryor goes into the conference and he is on the panel.
Yes.
And he is introduced as a Swedish gynecologist on the panel.
Yes.
And he, of course, they're asking him questions about, what do they ask him about?
I wrote it down actually. Good. In your paper on multiple orgasms in geriatric women, what do you find is the best exercise? And the turn of this is hilarious, because from the jump, these people should be like, well, this is not a doctor. But he mm-hmm. starts by going, some people like to go for hikes, and some people like to ride a bike. And all these doctors are like, sounds about right. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, but I've found that straight up fucking is like the best form of exercise. And that kind of makes them go like, wait, what's happening right now?
Right. And then he has, then he fakes that he is going blind, but he claims that he's,
because
he doesn't ever say that he's blind. And he's, the lady he's next to, they introduce the panel of doctors that he's with, is an ophthalmologist.
Right. So. She's like, let me take a look, you big baby. She calls him a big baby. She's like, I'm a doctor, you baby. Stop it. And he's freaking out in there. And that's when, in a second, Gene Wilder comes in. But while this is all happening, mm-hmm. Gene Wilder, he has to go into... So the woman is taking a shower.
Mm-hmm.
And she took, I guess, all
the bags in the bathroom with her, in the steamy bathroom.
Right. And he decides to sneak into this bathroom mm-hmm. and to then take whatever bag the coin's in and then take it out and look in it, to which she opens the shower curtain and looks like she has yogurt all over her face.
And then she grabs something in the bag that doesn't take any of it away. Like she reaches, like she should be reaching for a towel to wipe her eyes and then clearly see in there. She reaches for a bag for, I don't know what, like she puts something else on her hands that she rubs in her eyes and then kind of goes like, huh, and goes back in the shower to finish her yogurt facial, I guess.
I assume she just took handfuls of granola out and just like wiped them on her eyes.
It's like a breakfast get ready kind of situation she does in the shower. Yeah.
I think you're right in that the makeup team on this movie was a disaster because there's so many other things you could used to make it look more like soap. Like mm-hmm. it really does look like she has smeared yogurt all over her face. It's crazy.
But it does give us a little time for a topless lady. Because we do get to see some boobies.
Yeah.
And
that's when I was like, what is this movie rated? Although Richard Pryor, every other word out of his mouth is fuck. So yeah, I'm like, well, of course this is R. Yeah.
And then eventually she comes out of this. She does see, or he's caught, basically. Gene Wilder is caught by her. But he does some quick thinking and he pretends.
Is this quick thinking, Jamie?
He pretends that he puts his hand in his pocket and pretends it's a gun and basically threatens her with it the whole time. Mm-hmm. Makes her put her hands up so she's got to drop her towel and she's standing there naked. Goes really close to her again. They in the movie, they kind of feign like these two have a sexual tension between them, but you don't feel it. You feel more sexual tension between him and Richard Pryor, to be honest.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. He kisses this woman at gunpoint, which I believe is assault, Jamie. I'm pretty sure that's assault. And later in this movie, he goes, I held this woman at gunpoint with my erection. I was no, that was your hand.
No, but when he walks out, so it's his hand in his pocket. He's got the one hand in his pocket the whole time while he's threatening her.
Right.
And then as he like takes the suitcase and walks out, he uses both hands, one to hold the suitcase, one to open the door. But the gun is still there. It's his erection. It's kind of like funny.
It's kind of a fun little
And even she kind of looks at it like, what is happening?
Yeah.
And then he goes to find Richard Pryor on the panel. And Richard Pryor pretends that he's having a moment where he's
having,
blind.
He's having blindness hystericus. Again, every doctor there is like, yep, this checks out. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. All right. Yeah. And then Gene Wilder, a great bit of physical comedy where Gene Wilder leads him out, walks Richard Pryor into a door, backs up, then opens the door and hits him again with the same door. Pretty funny.
Yeah.
While all of this is going down, the conference, etc., the woman finally gets dressed and goes out in the parking lot, and they realize that this must be Richard Pryor's sister, so they take her hostage and write a quick note and give it to some parking attendant.
Right.
Because they run out, the car's gone, they're like, what's going on? And this guy, who maybe this guy was like Chris Farley's uncle or something, kind of what he looks like.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, they took, there were three of them, and they got in a car, and they went away. And, oh, also, they wrote this note down for me to give to you about where they're going to be, and blah, 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 whatever. At least they know where to go for the end of this movie.
Right.
Big final showdown, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It's this.
The big boss's
house. It's a house that's in the woods with a big greenhouse. His sister's tied up in a greenhouse, right?
Yeah.
Because it's a trap?
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
The two of them have another kind of cute conversation when the car rolls away for some reason.
Oh, that's right. He's standing on the car for some reason
because
they're trying to get up into the building. I don't remember.
Yeah. And wouldn't it be more funny if the blind guy was standing on the car as it rolled away because he might be unaware
that
but
it's
happening?
Gene
Wilder.
Yeah.
But they have a conversation, like a heart-to-heart, about how they're in over their heads.
Mm-hmm.
The funniest thing about this conversation is the roles that they're taking should be reversed.
Mm.
Because Gene Wilder's the one who has to be like, no, we can really do this. And Richard Pryor's the one that's like, I think we should just give up. And I'm like, your sister's in there. Mm-hmm. Like, shouldn't it be the other way around at this point?
But this is the friendship that they've...
Yes.
In 2 days, mind you.
This is
a quick thing. Quick
they become
around.
Good friends.
Mm-hmm. So Gene Wilder's job, or no, Richard Pryor's job is to basically whistle at the dogs.
Distract the dogs by whistling a lot.
Yes. And
so
Gene
they'll pay
Wilder,
more attention to that than Gene Wilder's body.
Well, Gene Wilder also, when he gets to where the dogs might be, he has a big, basically a like Costco size peanut butter that he throws out to the dogs to distract them. He sees the sister in the greenhouse, but now again,
this
he can't hear. So she can't
funny.
Hear that she's first of all, she's got something tied around her mouth.
Yeah.
So she's mumbling things to him.
Right.
He can't hear any of it. and she's telling him that it's locked and that there's an alarm, and he uses his hand to break the glass and open the door. Now, an alarm is going off like crazy, and she's just like, well, what am I going to do? I mean, he can't hear it.
Yeah.
And he finally unties her. And
he's like tiptoeing through. Again,
yeah, and going, shh.
With all of the deaf gags, I found this one very funny. Like, yeah. I was like, this is how you do a deaf gag in your movie. It's really great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he finally like takes the gag out of her mouth, and he's like, are you okay? And she's like, well, there is an alarm that's been going on for some time. And of course, then he turns around and the bad guys are there.
They're all there.
Well, she's there because Kevin Spacey's upstairs returning the coin.
Oh, no, because he's shady. He's getting shot, right? Doesn't he get killed by the boss?
He does.
You know, lights out situation.
I would like it if my response was, no, that didn't happen, Jamie.
I know.
Yeah, he has the coin for the boss, and he's like, so I got you this coin that you really wanted. What is it? And then we have to hear what this thing is, which all of this went over my head.
Me too.
No idea.
Yeah.
And Kevin Spacey goes, well, you know what? We need to renegotiate my contract because this is far more valuable than some like pirate doubloon or whatever he thought this was.
Uh-huh.
And the boss turns off the lights and shoots Kevin Spacey.
Mm-hmm. Which is great. There's that. Right.
It's wonderful.
And now she brings, right? Does she bring the two of them back up to him?
So this was kind of a funny bit here. I don't know how they're held at gunpoint by this woman, this sexy lady, and she leads them out of the greenhouse. And then the tables are turned where suddenly Gene Wilder has the jump on her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing because Richard Pryor's sister's just yelling, hit her, Dave, smack her, hit her so hard. But Jamie, he saw her boobies and he can't hit her.
He can't hit her.
So Richard Pryor's sister, like,
starts wailing on her. He's on top of her and wailing on her. Yeah.
And then immediately they are both captured again.
Mm-hmm.
Except Richard Pryor's sister gets away.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. She runs up and can escape. There's a thing that he's put down there, a log.
Oh, a log,
when he came down, that she climbs up, but when Gene goes to climb up it breaks.
Yeah.
And he just tells her, go on without me. She says at first she's going to wait, but then they start shooting at her, so she goes.
Again, should have been more of a moment between these two so they could end up together.
You're wanting their romance, I know.
They are both, Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder, are taken up to the bad guy's office by the woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the bad guy is finally revealed to be Anthony Zerbe, whoever this actor is.
I thought the reveal was that he was blind.
No. Yeah. That is a reveal. But he's,
as an actor,
he's
like, who is
also
he?
Also blind. So there is suddenly a blind guy gun battle for a little bit, which is kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, where these two are now trying to take shots at each other.
Yeah.
And they could hear. The one guy's obviously had a little more training shooting a gun blindly. Pryor drops the gun. He's like, I can hear. Did that fall? Was that the fall of a gun? But yeah, it's like a blind guy shootout.
Yes.
And then is it the girl that comes by
the
now?
The girl comes mm-hmm. up, Gene Wilder, the girl, and Richard Pryor are all in this guy's office now.
Mm-hmm.
And his plan is to kill her the same way he killed Kevin Spacey with the lights out gag. But she gets a jump on him and blows this dude away.
Like out the window. Flying out the window. Yeah.
In a movie where there really hasn't been much action. I mean, we saw a car chase kind of. Those rear projections in the car chase scene were hilarious.
Oh, yeah,
for everyone.
Really fun, yeah.
Each one was funnier than the last.
I agree.
This guy falls out the window, rolls down a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, off into, like, a lake. I was like, wow, this is really something for this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And she finally takes my advice, person watching this movie, and is like, I'm going to leave you two alive. The cops will take care of you.
Yeah.
There's a helicopter waiting for me down there. Bye.
Mm-hmm.
And then
we see
the cops.
Her go running.
Yeah, Why is she wearing green gloves? Did you notice those green gloves?
Yeah, she's got like green. They look like cleaning gloves. Like they're super really long. Yeah.
Yeah, they look like rubber dish gloves that they put on this woman.
I don't know why she's wearing them.
I don't know. And so now it all comes to a head because for some reason, Gene Wilder decides that zip lining down to the helicopter is a great idea. Richard Pryor jumps
using
on
a
his
pair
back.
Of pants right. to zip line
yes.
with.
Yes. Richard Pryor jumps on his back. They both fall off perfectly.
Well, and Richard Pryor is funny because he doesn't know. He's like, what are we doing? Is it something up high? And Gene Wilder's like, no, we're very low to the ground, but they're not at all.
And that's where Richard Pryor goes, I just kicked the top of a tree. He told me we weren't up high. So they drop down on both the helicopter pilot and the woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the cops come. And once again, I mean, you're backloading this movie with wonderful deaf gags.
Mm.
When Gene Wilder has a knife in his hand, like about to throw this knife, like he's some sort of, you know, he's in a circus or whatever, at the helicopter pilot, the cops pull in behind him. And he's like, put your hands up. And the guy won't. And the cops ask him to. And then he puts him up. And Gene Wilder's like, now come over here slowly. And the guy walks past him to the police. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Helicopter pilot and the woman are arrested.
Yeah.
And the police chief, for some reason, wants to gun down these two innocent men.
Police chief is, again, he's come unhinged by the end
of
this.
He's so hot at the end of this movie.
Yeah. I think it's because there's a blind, he's like a laughing joke right now. Even when he says it to the guy in the car with him, he says, like, these guys are just getting to me. They're making me the laughing stock. He's like, yeah, tell me about it. And he's like, you don't have to agree. Like, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this guy is, I believe, personality-wise, his baseline is unhinged. Like, that's it. Then they decide to go get ice cream again.
More ice cream time.
More ice cream.
Detox from this day.
Yeah. They mush it on each other's heads now.
Mm-hmm.
And then a freeze frame to them just sitting with
ice cream
on
their
heads.
Both their heads. Both their heads. Have an ice cream cone and melted ice cream on top.
And did you hear the song at the end of this?
No, please tell me.
Oh my God. I need to find it. I hope if I can find it, it's the song that plays at the end of this. It is such like a.
Oh, wait, I did. Because I was like, wait, is a new movie starting up already? Like it didn't go at all. Yeah.
That's exactly what I thought. And it's the lines are like, anything can happen. I'm like, what? This doesn't make any sense with this movie I just saw. Wow.
Yeah, and that's
amazing. That's it.
A little hodgepodge. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. It made me, one of my recommendations would be that we should all watch the other three movies that these two did together. Because I think one of them is on the in the 80s rather.
I think two of them. Oh wait, one might be in the 70s.
Yeah, this one was the 80s. And then Stir Crazy is 1980.
Okay. All
Silver
right.
Streak is the 70s. And Another You was in the 90s, but it said by then they were like,
yeah, I think that one's supposed
good.
To be really bad.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to take your recommendation.
Yeah. And watch
I think I'm
going to
watch it. Yeah, because I feel like there was enough in here
mm-hmm.
where, like, you know, we talked about this at the beginning. I really enjoyed their chemistry.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. The movie was fine. I just feel like it felt so similar to a lot of buddy comedy movies of this time.
Mm.
I don't think anything really stood out. There was enough funny dialogue to keep me interested, but I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it. It was fine.
It was like an even for you. Okay. I enjoyed it. Yeah.
I knew you would. Like I said, I knew you would. My recommendation, I could have gone with a lot of more like thriller or horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
There's one
having to do with people with disabilities.
Well, no, there's kind of, yeah.
Oh, yeah,
I don't know why I said no. I mean, yes, there are two movies that are kind of the same movie where in one, a blind woman witnesses a murder.
Oh.
And in another one, a deaf woman witnesses a murder.
Oh.
And then the killers are after them. But I'm not recommending those two movies.
Okay.
I am going to recommend a movie, and this really popped into my head when they were fighting
mm-hmm.
in this.
In the bar?
Yes.
Okay.
And I was just talking to my brother-in-law about this movie, and I could not think of the title of it. It is a kung fu movie from 1979 called The Crippled Masters. And it's a movie about these two fighters. One guy doesn't have arms, and the other guy doesn't have legs.
So how do they fight?
So they learn to fight with their disabilities. And these actors, like, they're two actors that really don't have arms and legs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's really kind of cool. And at one point in this movie, the one guy straps the other guy to his back.
Oh.
So he fights with his arms, and the other guy fights with his legs.
So they become one.
Yeah. It's kind of a silly movie. But
that's
the one I immediately thought of. And I was like, two guys that have disabilities but can become a fighting force when put together.
Better than blind and deaf. I love it.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm getting
my calendar out. Oh, that's great. Yeah.
It was on the wall, so I have to put it back on the wall. Go ahead. I'm listening.
So we talked about this at the beginning before we actually started the episode. So, but here's what our next two movies are going to be. As people know, I am taking everything from the Patreon and I am releasing it to the general audience. And we did a little thing on our Patreon where we covered made-for-TV movies in August. So we have a few of those coming out. But we did one called This House Possessed, which is a movie I don't even remember watching, let alone talking about. I don't know what happened. I could have suffered some sort of head injury, and instead of becoming blind, maybe I just forgot that specific movie.
Maybe.
But that will be next week. And after that, we decided on this, Jamie. It is my birthday choice. And of course, you know, we're picking movies. So I could have done anything at any point, but I thought, let's do something very special for my birthday. We're going to talk about the Garbage Pail Kids movie.
Correctamundo.
From 1987. And for introductions for that movie, Jamie, I'm going to have to find out if we had Garbage Pail Kid cards named after us.
Oh.
And find out the names of
those. That'll be great.
That's it, everybody. Again, thank you for your continued listening and support, and tell people about the podcast. If you have big Richard Pryor fan in your life and you're like, you want to hear people talk about this movie, just let them know.
Here it is.
Let them know. We would appreciate it. We will talk to you again in 2 weeks or 1 week, whatever. Until then, have a good 2 or 1 week.
Goodbye. That's it.
That great, but yo, it was getting kind of late. Talked about her father, said he never really liked her. She said that she'd been married to a schizophrenic biker. I thought I'd say goodbye, but then I saw her start to cry. We danced by the light of a video screen. She looked me in the eyes and she said, why me?
I'm really blind, man. What are you, fucking deaf?
One. Right. There it is. There it is.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, I gotta make sure.
Oh, yeah, I didn't check my levels. My levels look good.
Good. Yeah, mine looks okay.
Good. Yeah, those are good.
Yeah, mine are fine.
Yeah, I think it'll work.
Great.
All right. Hey.
I feel like we already, like, burned all our banter.
I did get a good giggle out of that Gary Busey creeper thing that makes me laugh.
Oh, just a quick, because I don't listen to your intros to the Patreon episodes.
Oh, you just put them on.
Well, no, I don't listen to them in advance of editing it. So okay. I take the audio from the Patreon and I put it in, and then I take your intro and I put that in front.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to make sure real quick, because I know there was a little bit of confusion. The next Patreon episode that comes out is This House Possessed, And at one point, you thought it was the Gary Busey movie, Hider in the House. Did you do your intro as if it was that?
No. No.
Okay. All right.
You know, that was the one about the couple, right? That moved in. Well, the dude that then what became a couple with the nurse that took care of him.
Oh, my God. You. Right? I even told you when you picked that, I was like, thank God, because I don't remember anything about that. And you're like, how could you forget Gary Busey hid in a house? I'm like, Jamie, it's not that. Also, no takesies, backsies. This is yours.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, good.
When I was reminded, it was a flood of like, what?
Yeah, because I don't remember. Like, I'm pretty good about remembering movies. But, boy, that one, it's just blank. I could not, other than what the guy in it was like in the Hardy Boys TV show. Like, I don't remember anything about.
The architecture of the house that he bought was a different, was interesting. I remember that. And then, yeah, otherwise, yeah, it's part of that big, big vat of.
No, just wanted to make sure.
Oh, no, it's correct.
And I know that you have a very, very busy schedule. There's a lot going on. I am probably going to tap you for a few more of those introductions.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I think I got your next two, but if you need a reminder of what the ones are that I need, I can certainly let you know.
Let me check. I think it's in this notebook. I do have it in this notebook.
No, it's fine.
Yep. Okay. And I've got them ready. On the next will be One Magic Christmas. Does that sound right?
I mean, that'll be...
Or Garlic is as good as 10 Mothers.
I don't know the order I have them. I will let you know the order I have.
Let me know, because you did.
I can move stuff around. Like,
this, for example, was a change-up, because on the original schedule... We were supposed to watch Amadeus. We talked about
right,
this.
Yes.
And it was a... So this movie that we have is not on the black and white, the hard copy of the schedule that I have.
Yeah.
It was like I didn't hear it, nor did I see it.
I get it. Mm-hmm. And again, that was an executive decision. Maybe not the right decision by me, but I was like, do we want to watch something that's an hour longer than this? Or do we just want to watch this?
Just keep this.
I kept this. I also have a quick question for you. And I
load it up with questions. I like it.
Because again, I don't want to make you put in too much time and effort. Because I don't like to do that either. But the next choice for me is my birthday choice.
Ooh.
Now, I chose something originally that I think might be too much of an endeavor. So I picked something instead.
Too much of an endeavor.
Well, the reason is...
Are there like 3D glasses involved? What?
I was going to try and, I believe, work through some childhood trauma.
Oh, boy.
By choosing the...
It's not this kind of podcast, know.
by choosing the two-part made-for-TV movie... Alice in Wonderland Through the Looking Glass.
Why is that not a choice? Is that off the table?
I think it's like 3.5 hours long. I'm not saying we can't do it. We
could. But broken up into two episodes like we did Lace?
Oh, I didn't. You know what? I didn't even consider that. We did Lace in two episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we could do that. Or my backup, and this may be more appealing or far less appealing, is the... A movie that I had heard existed, the Garbage Pail Kids movie.
Oh, these are two good ones. I bet the Garbage Pail Kids movie cannot be more than 65 minutes.
How could you? It's about trading cards. Yeah. How? But also, it seems so crazy. Like, I just saw stills from it, and I was like, this is horrific.
Yeah, no, that might be, and for your birthday pick, it might just...
I know, but will it be another Masters of the Universe situation? I don't know.
Well, I don't know. If you're not taken, I might, I don't mean to grab it from you, but that Alice in Wonderland episode, that...
you know what? Okay.
That movie is special to my heart.
Oh.
Isn't Carol Channing in
there? She sure is. Yeah. So is everyone else that was over the hill by that point.
It's lovely.
All right. So why don't we do this? I will take Garbage Pail Kids. And then, assuming things have calmed down by your birthday.
Well, I would hope so. I hope we're both sitting by a fire somewhere together.
Oh my God.
Podcasting. How romantic is that?
That would be great. I just saw today... 7 years ago today, we were podcasting about Harry and the Hendersons in the...
In Oregon. In the Stuga.
Yeah.
Wow. 7 years ago?
7 years ago, yes.
Dang.
So.
Time, man. She's a bandit.
I know.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. That's all.
Okay.
Just wanted to let you know that, so... Yeah.
All right. All so right. Housekeeping. Some housekeeping. Okay. Right. But so I think that is a great birthday pick for you.
Kids at the end of this.
Mm-hmm. I approve.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can't wait. All right. Boy, that Alice in Wonderland. Did I tell you I saw that?
It's a haunting episode.
I found the DVD at a thrift store.
Did you buy it?
I did. It was 99 cents, and I was like, yeah. This is worth it.
Yeah. Great. That's awesome. We can watch the DVD together.
Oh, my God.
I mean...
Over two nights. You can't pack all that music into one evening.
Cannot. Especially for me. You know, I tire easily these days, especially if we're going to watch it at night. Maybe come over around this time of day.
Yeah, right.
We'll get an hour in, and then I'll go off to work, and then...
Right, yes. Yeah. I assume by the time Pat Morita shows up as a rabbit or something, Barrett will go to bed. He'll be like, this is good... Good for you guys. Have fun.
All right. Well.
Oh yeah.
Well, here we are
this.
Now. Now we're in the present. Oh, I do the intro here.
You do. Yeah.
All right. Then that's what I'll do. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Good Times, Great Movies.